Online harassment has become an ugly part of internet culture, and some parts of the internet have proven to be more potentially ugly than others, especially for women. Computer and video games are an estimated $91 billion industry. In the summer of 2014, an online game developer and reviewer named Zoe Quinn had a breakup with her boyfriend. That boyfriend retaliated by publishing intimate details about Zoe online. After that, mobs of online users got involved, some of them raining down harassments and threats on Zoe Quinn. The whole affair became known as Gamergate. Last year, Zoe Quinn filed a lawsuit to prevent her ex from commenting on the controversy and stirring up more harassment against her. But this week, Quinn asked the district attorney in Massachusetts to withdraw that criminal case. Gamergate and the subsequent lawsuits have opened up a lot of questions about online harassment of women, of course, but also about free speech and how far the law can go in stopping threats or those who may instigate them. Here's Zoe Quinn.
I don't think the courts are ready to even deal with this, quite frankly. I think that all of the education that we see in the public about the internet not mattering, about, you know, all of just the misunderstandings, treating the internet like a magical alternate universe where nothing matters, means that for me, it doesn't feel like a battle worth fighting.
That's Zoe Quinn in an interview with the Washington Post this week on her decision to end her criminal case. Here to talk about what the law in its current form can and cannot do to protect the targets of online harassment are Danielle Citron. She's a professor of law at the University of Maryland. And also Brianna Wu, a games developer, a journalist, and a podcaster. Welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you for having us.
Brianna, for those who have followed Gamergate, they'll know that you've also been the target of online harassment and threats after you got involved. When did the Gamergate mobs turn on you, and what happened?
Well, you know, Zoe is kind of the spark that started this in the public consciousness, but she's also part of a trend that had been happening to women in the game industry throughout most of 2014. I had been speaking out on seeing some of my friends targeted, and eventually they went after me as well. I've had over 200 death threats in the last year and a half. I get rape threats constantly. I had my college call me 3 weeks ago and tell me Gamergate was trying to impersonate me to get my college records and release them.
Danielle Citron, professor of law. Zoe's ex-boyfriend kind of ranted online about her and their relationship, but he didn't threaten her. But others, a lot of others, then did threaten her. Does this present a legal problem when it comes to enforcement? Because harassment and threats are already illegal.
Right. So harassment requires, if you're going to be convicted of harassment, the state's got to prove that someone intentionally, repeatedly, persistently targeted the person with speech that we can punish. And so some of the problem when you have like a huge collective of people targeting a specific person is that it may be that any given person in the mob may contribute a little to the abuse, but not one person is responsible for persistent targeted abuse, right? They may contribute one or two comments, but is that harassment? It might not be, right? It might not arise to that sort of persistent, intentionally causing someone emotional distress and the fear of physical harm. And that is that really complicates things for law enforcement.
So what does that mean then for victims? Does that mean that because it's a mob and not one person, you just have to deal with it or get offline? Or is way to go after the fomenters, the instigators, the people who are whipping up the mob, if you can even do that?
Law has great potential here. But, you know, as we've seen, it's a blunt instrument. Sometimes it fails us, right? So that, you know, when we saw it in Zoe's case, she gave up because it just became too much for herself and her loved ones to bear. So we have laws like criminal solicitation laws. The problem sometimes is, and I'm just going to echo both what Zoe and Brianna were saying, is that sometimes it's really hard to educate law enforcement. They need a lot of training to understand the real significance of this kind of behavior and its real world impact. And so that really presents problems, not only if you have all the evidence and you can trace all of the posts to specific individuals, and even if they all are engaging in prescribable conduct like a true threat, it may be that law enforcement feels outgunned.
Brianna, let's take a step back from the law just for one second and get to the bottom of how this whole thing started. In your case and in Zoe's case, what was your crime? What did you do wrong that got the mobs against you?
I think you have to take a step back and kind of think about the state of the game industry. So In 1985, Nintendo made a very deliberate choice to only market video games towards boys between 5 and 10 years old. And this seemingly simple choice has deeply affected our industry for the last 30 years. It's considered a very, very male pastime. I think the average person can look at video games and understand we have some extreme problems in the way that we represent women. So what has happened is for 30 years, video games are perceived by a certain portion of gamers to be their clubhouse. So now that the video game industry is changing and we have a lot more women developers, women journalists, women CEOs like me, that is very, very threatening to a certain portion of gamer. So our crime is simply being a woman in this field and speaking to our lived experience and asking the industry to do better.
Daniel Citron, it seems like a lot of law enforcement is kind of a club too, and I don't mean to be pejorative, but I wonder if a mostly male police force or a mostly male FBI has a real sense of how this problem affects women when they're harassed.
I mean, that's definitely part of it. Social attitudes are sort of long been a problem. You think about the way we address domestic violence, of course, in the home. It was a family problem. It was no big deal. Why don't you just leave if you don't like it? Those same kinds of attitudes really infect how law enforcement responds to online harassment. You know, in my book, I sort of document ways in which, you know, law enforcement will tell victims, turn your computer off. You know, boys will be boys. It's no big deal. I think we're making a little bit, I want to say very modest progress. We've seen law enforcement, sort of top cops like AG Kamala Harris kind of take on this issue and really think hard about ways in which law enforcement can be better trained.
I also think that the tech industry has a huge role to play. The truth is, social media companies, when I go and speak at these companies and I look around at other software engineers there, these are all, you know, men. And it's usually men with a very specific background, you know, white, straight, you know, kind of engineering. And as a result of that, the policies at Facebook, Reddit, Twitter have been aimed at not protecting anyone else for a very long time. So now this problem has kind of come to a head, and you have these companies looking around and saying, oh my gosh, like, this is terrible. Like, people are getting harassed on our service. So I think there's certainly a law enforcement side to it, but I think there's also a tech industry side.
There's an ongoing reckoning with the harassment of women online, raising questions of culture and raising questions of the law. Daniel Citron is a professor of law at the University of Maryland. Brianna Wu, games developer, podcaster, and CEO. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.